indicate if you can hear me, the counsel there.
Good morning, Your Honor. Tim Kelly on behalf of the relator.
A Squires for Lesueur County.
Very good. And I'll just say for the record, as the parties are already aware, the Minnesota Court of Appeals is declining to hold oral arguments live at the Minnesota Judicial Center here in St. Paul or in other courtrooms outstate where we typically would hold oral argument. And we're doing so for the good of the public, the parties, the attorneys, and court staff. And we're doing so in light of the ongoing national and Minnesota pandemic state of emergency. We're therefore entertaining this oral argument by a video conferencing tool, WebEx, with none of the judges or the participants present in the same precise location, at least not in the same courtroom. The technology, I will tell counsel, is not perfect. It is an imperfect substitute for in-person hearings, as we've already experienced some this morning. And so just bear that in mind, because sometimes there's some lag between the time a word is spoken and the moment it's heard by others. So please keep that in mind. But in keeping with due process, our hearings are open to the public, and the audio recordings of these proceedings will be made available on the judiciary's website and uploaded at the earliest opportunity after today's argument. Having said that, and indicated that there might be some technical glitches, I see that one of counsel has disappeared from my screen. Mr. Squires, are you still with us? If you're speaking, we can't hear you. All right. I have an icon just showed up on the screen with a little triangle and an exclamation point, which would suggest a lack of connection, I think. Yep, there he's showing up again, maybe some other portal. There you are, Mr. Squires. Are you back with us?
I'm back. I hope it doesn't happen again. I don't know what the problems are, but I am here.
Well, I'm sorry you were gone. Mr. Kelly's already made his argument, and we've already agreed with him entirely. That's the proceedings.
I was worried that would happen.
All right. In all seriousness, hopefully we'll keep our connections here. The rules of presentation are unchanged despite our technological portal and forum, with each party having 15 minutes to argue with an additional 5 minutes for relator for rebuttal if you'd like to use it. So, and I will try to indicate to counsel the timing restrictions using a we have some technical glitches here. Occasionally I will flash on the screen so you can see it, the time left in your argument. So please bear that in mind. Counsel for relator, whenever you're ready to proceed, we'll try to marshal through this thing.
And thank you, Your Honor. Just to clarify, because we've had some glitches this morning, if anyone or Mr. Squires, the same thing happens during my argument, should I just stop and point that out?
If you notice, we should notice too that if there's any problems, but if you notice, please let us know, because obviously we're not going to continue with the argument until everybody's back on board in case somebody drops off for technological reasons.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Squires. This case should begin and end with the court holding that relator's conditional use permit application to construct.
I'm sorry, just for the record, if we could state our names as we commence each leg of your argument, that would help us in the audio recording of things.
Thank you, Your Honor. Timothy Kelly on behalf of the relator.
Thank you.
This case should begin and end with the court holding that relator's conditional use permit application to construct the solar farm was automatically approved under Minnesota Statute 15.99. is also known as the 60-day rule. The rules in the relator's favor on that issue, the court does not need to reach any of the other issues involved in this appeal. As this court has explained in the Tollefson case, the underlying purpose of the 60-day rule is to establish clear deadlines for an agency to approve or deny a zoning application.
Can you help me, Mr. Kelly, with a big picture question about this issue? How are we reviewing this question? Is it a matter of law as to whether or not there was notification provided by the county that the application was or was not complete? Is it a factual question that we're looking to as to completeness or the county's treatment of it? How are we reviewing this issue?
I believe it's de novo, Your Honor, because it's on review from the administrative record before the county. And with respect to whether or not there were notices that an application was incomplete, I don't think the court even has to reach that issue, because the record shows that when the county exercised its right to extend the 60-day deadline, it selected March 15th, 2019 as the commencement date for those additional 60 days.
In other words, regardless of the first 60 days as to when it ended, the county designated its extension by essentially giving it a date certain termination.
Correct. What the extension letter said from the county, and they have the right under the statute to extend. They said, we're extending the deadline an additional 60 days. And the key here is commencing on March 15th, 2019. And 60 days from that date, obviously, is May 14th. And there's no dispute the county did not act until after that date. And so once that extended period expired, the county lacked any authority under the statute to further extend the deadline. And so I don't think the court needs to find or make findings regarding whether or not there was notification of an incomplete application, or determine whether or not there was a material amendment of the application.
Can I ask you something about the state of the record? I saw in your reply brief a graphic image of the for office use stamp and check marks by the county, indicating that the application was completed in January. Is that just part of our record on appeal? Was that communicated to your client after the receipt after the county received the application? When did your client become aware of that check mark, or when was it communicated?
What the record shows is that they had a meeting on January 14th, there's a meeting requirement where you submit the application. And then the office use section is dated and completed on January 14th, 2019. There is not an additional document in the record that says, aside from that document, that says to the relator, the application was deemed complete on January 14th.
So when did I'm wondering when this, so I know how these things tend to work. I think when some document is submitted to a government agency, there's some internal markings that go on and internal communication and designations. Sometimes that document, after it's been marked, is returned in its marked condition to the applicant, and sometimes it's just something that's kept in the office for internal use. What was it in this case?
There's nothing in the record to suggest that the office use only section of the application was ever returned to the relator.
When did the relator discover? What does the record tell us about when it showed up as part of the record? Was it at the hearing?
The application was always part of the record. So that would have been part of the record the first time the Planning Commission considered this application in February, and it's part of the administrative record that the county filed with the court.
Okay, including the check mark. That is, when the commissioners, when they receive their packet, do they receive the version with the stamp and the check mark, or do they get just the one that was submitted without the in-office designations?
I believe it would include the in-office designations, because that's part of the application. It's just like when you go fill out your driver's license,
right?
Your personal information, but then there's office use only. You don't fill that out.
Okay.
But, that would be then, you know, it's dated and signed by Michelle Mettler, who is the zoning assistant administrator. So let's check that date.
So at the time of the hearing, this is the document, the marked document is the official application.
Correct.
All right.
And so going back.
Mr. Kelly, you started out by talking about the March letter. Is that critical to your argument regarding the expiration of the 120 days? In other words, if the court agrees with the respondent that is appears on its face to be a clerical error, does that mean your position goes away with regard to the first issue, the argument of the timeline lapsing?
The letter is dated February 29th, just to clarify, and that's when they said it commenced the additional 6 days on March 15th. If the court were inclined to create a clerical exception that has never been recognized under Minnesota Statute 1599, that would defeat the 60-day rule argument the relator is making.
Well, let me ask then, from the record, does it matter to your argument the changes that were required, which there's no dispute as well, to the plan, which then is the main point respondent makes as to a February, I believe, 6 or 9 date, something along those lines. Is that an important fact, or is the all it relates to is that letter you're referring to and whether we take it at face value or not?
Well, two things I'd say. With respect to the letter, we all can read what it says, and it's commencing March 15th, 2019. And with respect to this clerical error argument, you know, that's premised on the county having actually determined the application was incomplete or treating the materials that were submitted on February 6, 2019 as a material amendment to the application. There's nothing in the record that supports either of those claims. The county never claimed the application was incomplete, and so the 60-day rule commenced at a later date until we received the county's reply brief. The county only claimed there was a material amendment to the application after realtor had and notified the county that the application had been deemed automatically approved under the 60-day rule. And so this clerical error argument is really something the county came up after the fact. With respect to the amendment argument, there's one case that I'm aware of that addresses that issue, and that's the Tollison case. And in that case, this court said, only material or significant amendments to a zoning request will operate to restart the 60-day period.
That was sort of dicta in that case, wasn't it? I mean, that wasn't the holding of the case, and that declaration of law wasn't essential to the holding, was it?
Correct. I think I was careful to say the court said.
No. I understand that. I'm just trying to get a sense of whether you're saying that that's binding authority on this court as a matter of law.
I would say it was not the holding of Tollison, but it's the only statement or time that an appellate court has addressed that issue. And in Tollison, I'm sure the court's aware, the initial request requested that the county zone the property as a planned unit development. But then after, the applicant actually sent a letter saying, I want you to amend this to zone it R3. And here, there was no change to the type of conditional use the relator was asking for. There was no change to the zoning designation.
Well, let me ask you, I'm looking at the email exchanges that began, it looks like February 1, and from the project development manager of your client, and it says this: We will have updated site plans sent to you shortly, which incorporate all changes necessary to comply with the ordinance. Is there a deadline to get those incorporated into the packet? And it looks like so my question for you is, this term, all changes necessary to comply with the ordinance, was it the ordinance bearing upon what's necessary for a CUP application, or was it the ordinance that designated a 75-foot setback requirement that was part of that that was that was being meant in that term, changes necessary to comply with the ordinance?
It was 100% compliance with the setback ordinance. The ordinance section 21 addresses what the application needs to have. There's nothing about specific setback requirements of the ordinance.
Is there an ordinance that includes, is there something in the ordinance that includes the site plan as part of the application for a CUP?
All I'm aware of is section 21 of the ordinance says there shall be a site plan. It doesn't say site plan must comply with every other ordinance, zoning. I mean, obviously moving forward, if there was a setback issue, that could be taken, could be a grounds for denial, but it's not a grounds to say the application's incomplete. And just to go back to this extension letter and this clerical error claim, I think it's important to consider after they state we're commencing the additional 60 days from March 15th, the county says the reason is new information received. And if you look at the docket on February 22nd, there was supporting information that the relator had submitted after one of the Planning Commission meetings to bolster its case. So this whole clerical error claim only comes up after the county is told that the application was automatically approved. And so I don't think there's any analysis under which you could determine, you could hold that the revisions regarding the setback and removing a dead end driveway could be deemed material to restart a zoning request. I mean, again, the purpose here is to set clear deadlines. And so there's no communication throughout this for the county saying it's been restarted. No communication saying you materially amended it. And so creating this clerical error exception would defeat the whole purpose of this statute.
Is there any prejudice to your client if there was, in fact, a clerical error? I mean, where the deadline was pushed from one date to the other, did you rely upon the May 15th deadline in a way that caused any change in your client's behavior?
Prejudice, Your Honor, respectfully, is not something that needs to be demonstrated.
No, I understand that argument. I'm just wondering whether there was.
There's nothing in the record that would support that. I mean, this court has held the burden is on the agency to comply with the rule. The Supreme Court has identified this as an automatic approval penalty that provides a mandatory consequence for not failing. So there doesn't have to be prejudice. Thank you.
Counsel, your time has expired, and I'll just let you know, I guess no one's going to know this in the audio recording, but when I flash my camera under the screen, you might see the reflection of a beautiful scene in the background. And just so you know, I'm not actually on the shores of a lake up in the Boundary Waters. That's my screensaver on another. I'm sitting in the judicial chambers. Thank you for your argument, Mr. Kelly. Counsel for the respondent.
Are you there, Your Honor? Uh-oh.
Yep, we are.
Okay, what happened?
Your audio is coming through. Your video is also. We can see you. Can you hear us?
There we go. Boy, this is high stress for me, this technology. Thank you, Your Honors. Jay Squires appearing on behalf of LeSueur County. I'd like to actually go backwards. The court was very interested in the 60-day rule issue, but I think it's important that we address the substantive challenge to the conditional use permit decision as well. So I will address and hit the 60-day rule, but I'd like to start a little bit backwards. And I'd like to really drill down and focus on, I think, what is the key difference between the parties in the challenge of the conditional use permit denial. Just by way of background, very briefly, we touch it on it in our briefs, but Minnesota Statute 394.301 authorizes counties to designate certain uses as conditional uses. And that statute says, upon a showing by the applicant that the standards and criteria for a conditional use permit may be met, and the county can issue the permit. So I just wanted to point out at the outset, number one, that the applicant bears the burden of demonstrating compliance with the criteria, and two, that the county has the ability to define what the criteria are for issuances of conditional use permits.
And that's with regard to the substance of the application, but not on as to the procedure, correct?
That's correct, yeah. It relates to the substantive challenge to the conditional use permit in this case.
Can we talk about the procedure? I know you want to save that for later, but that seems to be at least the threshold concern. I will tell you that maybe I misread your brief, but there's this designation by the county that the application was complete in January.
There's an internal note that was filled out by the clerk in the zoning office that indicated that. That's correct. There's no information.
And that becomes part of the record, right? That's stamped onto the application itself?
The county included it as part of the record once this lawsuit was initiated, as part of the administrative record. There's no evidence in the record that the applicant ever was given notice of that particular provision of the document or given separate notice that the county deemed it to be complete.
So when you say part of the record, I mean, it is part of the record, not just on appeal, but it was part of the record for the decision makers.
No, it is part of the record that we submitted to this court for review. There's no evidence that document was ever transmitted to the relator. And I don't know that Mr. Kelly said that. He just simply said it's part of the record on appeal. Which,
right.
Yes, we did include it as part of the record.
So if it's part of the record on appeal, I gather you realize it's material. I didn't notice it in your brief. I saw it in the reply brief of City Solar, but I didn't notice any reference to that in your brief. Is there a reason that we missed that?
No reference to the for office use only portion.
No reference to the fact that the office had deemed it complete in January.
Again, for its own internal purposes, the clerk checks off whether there is.
No, I understand that. I'll just tell you, I was a little troubled by the fact that I didn't learn about this fact. Apparently, you thought it was relevant to include it in the record, but somehow it wasn't mentioned in your brief. I gather you think it was insignificant, but
yes, that's correct.
It's at least relevant, isn't it?
Well, the fact that the clerk checked off the box that a site plan was provided certainly is the case because a site plan was provided. But that, in Your Honor, doesn't affect the legal analysis in this case for these reasons. It doesn't change the fact. Again, we're dealing with the fundamental issue on the 60-day rule. And my judgment is one of completeness, and the statute is 15.99 subdivision 3. So what that statute says is that the 60 days doesn't start unless a request contains all information required by a previously adopted rule, ordinance, or policy of the agency. And what the agency has to do is to submit notice within 15 business days telling the requester what is missing.
Okay, so what was missing? I'm looking at the
missing.
I'm looking at the
missing, Your Honor.
Emails. Looking at the emails that were sent,
yes.
And it looks like there was I'm looking at the February 4th email. The setback from the road was measured from the center line. Needs to be 75 feet from the county road right of way, and 85 feet from the highway. That doesn't look like an indication that anything was missing, as in incomplete, but was perhaps incorrect?
I think it's one and the same thing, Your Honor. What was missing and what the ordinance requires is a site plan that demonstrates compliance with the ordinance requirements. And there's logic to that because staff cannot process an application through the decision-making procedure until it has a site plan that's compliant. So that's the piece that was missing. Implicit in the requirement that there be a site plan showing the nature of the project is a requirement that that site plan meet the requirements of the ordinance.
Okay, so the word there, I think, was implicit.
Yes.
So there's no explicit ordinance that requires that the application, the site plan, be accurate. You're saying it's implicit that if it's not accurate, it's not complete.
I think it's a fair reading of the ordinance requiring a site plan that the site plan.
And what's the language in the ordinance that would draw that inference that you're asking us to draw, which was that an inaccurate setback in the site plan constitutes an incomplete application?
I don't have the ordinance in front of me, but my recollection is, Your Honor, that the ordinance simply references site plan. As Mr. Kelly indicated, it's section 21 of the ordinance that indicates that. It doesn't say a accurate site plan, but I think accuracy is something that can be reasonably read into the ordinance. For example, if they apply for a solar garden and they give us a project that shows a mini nuclear power plant located in the middle, is that something that we have to process? Is that something that's complete? Can we say this is not a site plan that shows compliance of a project with our ordinance, and you have to give us a site plan that shows us just a solar garden? I think that's a hyperbolic example, but that's the point I'm trying to make, and I think it's a reasonable one.
Well, let's assume that's correct. The other moment I had of concern is 1599 subdivision 3F, F as in Frank. The agency may extend the time limit in subdivision 2 before the end of the initial 60-day period by providing written notice. And then here's the part that kind of held me up. The notification must state the reasons for the extension and its anticipated length, which may not exceed 60 days. Now, that may not exceed 60 days language made me think that perhaps a county can extend the deadline for, say, 20 days or 30 days. But the county's not required. It's not an automatic extension of 60 days and then another 60 days. So there's 120 days. That's not automatic, is it? The county can choose how far to extend the deadline. Am I correct?
Yes, I agree with your interpretation, Your Honor. That is how I read that.
So if that's so, let's assume that's so, and let's assume all of your other argument is correct, that there was an incomplete site plan, an incomplete application, that was actually communicated to the applicant as an incompletion, and therefore there's a restarting of the clock. Why doesn't the county's extension letter designating May 15th as the deadline in this discussion? Why isn't that the deadline? Because the county chooses not to go the full 120 days, the county notifies the applicant that you're only going to May 15.
Because it's a little bit more complex than that, Your Honor, because the letter, if you look at it closely, has an unfortunate ambiguity. And that is, while it does contain that date, as you point out, it also says that the county is extending an additional 60 days.
Right.
So on the one hand,
you're extending 60 days, but you can ask for, you can begin to ask that, you can say 30 days into it, into the first period that, you know, we want an additional 60 days, which would make the total 90 instead of 120. Why isn't that the right way to interpret the letter?
Well, the letter, when it says an additional 60 days, it is referring to 60 days on top of the initial 60 days. And that is from my experience, I'll say, Judge, extra record commentary. I always advise clients and counties, when you extend it for the full additional 60 days because you get one extension under the statute.
And that's I get that's probably the best practice and you get the full amount, but I'm looking at what actually was communicated, not what in your experience you usually do, or what was in the mind of the writer of the letter. I'm looking at the actual letter itself. Isn't the letter what determines the deadline?
It isn't, but that's not how I read the letter. The letter says that the county is extending the decisional period an additional 60 days. So what that means fairly is that an additional 60 days on top of the decisional time limit that exists already. So that takes it out to 120. I think that's a fair reading of the letter, Your Honor, and that.
Excuse me, counsel, could the county have not mentioned March 15th and simply said it's a 60-day extension, or isn't it required that they give a date?
No, Your Honor, it's not required that they give a date, and that was the unfortunate circumstance here where the clerical error wraps us in. That was miscalculated, and that did not take into consideration the issue. So that's where we have the ambiguity.
Since you mentioned clerical error, we've got case law and other situations where the term clerical error has been examined, and you're going to have to explain to me how this situation fits a clerical error. You're suggesting that the person meant to type April 7, but instead typed March 15?
No, I think more accurately, Your Honor, I would call it a computational error. What was done was the clerk looked back at the forms and looked at the dates and did not take into consideration the fact that the site plan issue existed where it was deficient. The relator acknowledged it was deficient, then submitted the new site plan, and that new date triggered a new 60-day period. So that was the reputational error.
What that person probably looked back on is what we referenced earlier is the office use only form, which not only checks the box for site plan, but it also checks the box that says application complete. So is this where the clerical error took place?
Again, I would call it a computational error, but it may well be that in looking back at that person did not take into consideration the fact that the site plan was rejected, a new site plan that met ordinance requirements was required for the application to be considered complete. So yes, I think that's where the error fell.
Mr. Squires, would you agree, regardless then of the specific dates, that the law, at least as we understand it in the plain reading of the statute, is not all changes mean as a matter of law that it's an entire new plan? Your point being, in this particular case, it is significant enough such that it is, and therefore, even though the office did not repeat a receipt of a plan in February, as a matter of law, looking at these facts, it was a new plan.
That's the secondary argument, Your Honor, under Tollefson. It was a plan, certainly a new plan that was materially different because the resubmitted plan complied with the ordinance requirement.
When you say materially different, I mean, we're talking about the setback difference between the middle of the road and the edge of the road doesn't seem to be the kind of significant change or that would make this the kind of amendment that Tollefson's referring to.
And changes in access road accesses as well, Your Honor. There were two changes, both deficiencies that were acknowledged by the relator. We don't contest that their initial application or site plan was deficient. They don't contest in this proceeding that their initial site plan did not meet the ordinance requirements. They agreed that it didn't. They resubmitted a site plan that did.
Here's the problem. When you say doesn't meet the ordinance requirements, the question isn't whether it meets the ordinance requirements for setbacks. The question seems to be whether it meets the ordinance requirements for the application process. Am I correct about that as just a theoretical matter?
Well, I think it's a nuanced difference, Your Honor. And again, I think we talked about that. But in my judgment, a reading, I've got 5 seconds to answer your question.
Sorry, I ask you a question and I throw up. That seems unfair. But go ahead. You can answer. Take as much time as you need.
Again, that goes back to our earlier discussion we had about a fair reading of the ordinance requirement that there be a site plan, and the fair reading being in that a site plan that complies with the ordinance requirements.
Okay, just so I'm just to give you one last opportunity at this, because it, I think it, your argument seems to really hang on it. Can you quote for us the language in the ordinance that leaves a reasonable reader to the inference that you're saying exists in the ordinance?
Again, for some reason, the ordinance isn't in the file, and I'm guessing you'll not give me enough time to pull it up online and be able to take a look at it.
Probably, so we can find it. We'll know where to look for it. You're saying that there's an ordinance that says you have to submit a site plan with your application.
Yes, correct.
And you're saying that requirement to have a site plan is requires the site plan to be accurate in all respects. And if it's not accurate in all respects, it's not that it is an inaccurate submission, it is an incomplete submission. That's your argument.
If they're advised that you haven't submitted a site plan that complies with the requirements, and again, the fundamental purpose of that is consistent with the 60-day rule, which allows the governing body 60 days to render a decision. So it makes sense to me that because staff cannot pass an application packet along until that document complies, that site plan complies with all the requirements, that again, that's consistent with the notion that requiring a site plan means requiring one that shows or proposes a project that is consistent with all the requirements of the ordinance. And again, it's section 21, Your Honor, and the court has said in cases that you can take notice of zoning ordinances. So
yes, and we will.
That is available, I know, online, and the court wants supplemental briefing on that issue or something, I'd be happy to do that, but that's available.
Thank you, Mr. Squires. Any rebuttal? I think, Mr. Kelly, if you're talking, you're muted out.
I think I get that one mistake with the muted. Thank you. Yes, Ron, I do have a rebuttal on this brief. I believe record doc 3 in the administrative record, this is just for your reference, is the notice of public hearing. And in that notice of public hearing, approximately in the middle of the page, it says, applications are available for review at the Environmental Services Building during normal business hours and on the website. And so this is the application we've been talking about. How has it been used? This is the county saying, you want to review the application, it's online or it's at our office. That goes to the point of your questions regarding the office use only section, because that is in the application.
So there was, you're saying, notice given to the public and presumably then to your client as well, that the office had designated the application as complete in January.
Correct.
Now, would you agree with me that there's nothing that prevents a county from accepting as complete an application and then telling the applicant that it's complete, reviewing it further, and then notifying the applicant within 15 days, well, wait a minute, it's not really complete. We made a mistake. Here's what you need to do to make it complete. Is it your position that first designation of completion ends the question and the county can no longer then, within that 15-day period under the statute, 1599, require a more complete submission?
No, I believe that the county can take their 15 business days, and whenever it is during that time period, if they give the proper notice and there actually is an incomplete application, that.
So in this case, if Mr. Squires is correct that there was proper notice of incompletion, if there was actual incompletion and proper notice of incompletion, that it doesn't matter that there was designation earlier that it was complete.
Correct. The the point, I think, with the office use only section is that when you're trying to evaluate this clerical error section, that you can actually see what the county did. And they continued to obviously publish that.
Well, that's why I was asking originally whether this was a question of fact or a question of law. When we're looking and saying, what was the county doing? Is this, was it as a matter of fact, a notification of incompleteness? Was it as a matter of fact, a clerical error? That's what I was asking about. Yeah.
And I don't think there's any fact, there are no fact issue the court needs to decide because of how the county sent the extension letter. Mr. Squires argues there's some ambiguity. It's the county's burden under the law make sure it complies with the 60-day rule. There's no way you can read that letter unless the court recognizes a clerical error exception to extend the deadline beyond May 14th, 2019. If you find a clerical error exception and allow the county to then go after the fact and further extend the deadline beyond May 14th, I don't win this appeal. But there is no clerical exception. Unless there's any question, that's all I have.
Well, it looks like there are no questions. I have a feeling that if there are any questions or further discussion on it in the next oral argument, you folks might be aware of who's making the next oral argument in the next case. I'm guessing that these same issues might be covered. But for the purposes of this oral argument, the matter is submitted. Thank you for your briefing. Thank you for your oral argument. Thank you for accommodating the technological challenges, and hopefully we get them all cleared up so in the next argument we can operate smooth sailing. So with that, the matter is submitted, and we will take the case under advisement, issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you.